culture of innovation and diversity in the heart of Itasca County. Learn more, theforgeitasca.org, where ideas take shape.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
Sunny today, highs upper 50s to low 60s, south winds 5 to 10. Tonight, upper 30s to mid 40s with clear skies, beautiful moon out there. Increasing clouds tomorrow, though, with mostly sunny skies, 63 to 66 degrees.
And coming up next is the Up North Report. We receive support from the Bonner Eye Clinic with locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, offering cataract surgery, LASIK, and general eye exams. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly. And don't forget also, and later in the show, we're going to be talking with Amy Thielen.
Yeah, I'm so curious to hear from our ham radio host about how the fall's been and all the putting up all the garden produce and if she got overwhelmed by it or some recipe ideas. I have too many apples, so I'm hoping she can help me with that.
So that'll be coming up later this morning. Now it's time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. Two people from Park Rapids are facing multiple felony charges for their roles in an alleged attempted murder early Saturday morning. Court documents accuse 43-year-old Charles Justice of entering a Hubbard County trailer home and stabbing a man. Deputies responded to Piney Park around 3 a.m. on report of a man bleeding with possible stab wounds and his 5-year-old daughter screaming for help. The victim was airlifted to Fargo for treatment of his injuries. Justice allegedly admitted to using methamphetamine and believed his wife, Danielle Westfall, was having an affair with the victim. Authorities say 51-year-old Westfall eventually admitted to helping Justice dispose of the bloody clothing from the assault. A pair of blood-soaked jeans were found on the side of the road as part of the investigation in the same area where Westfall said she disposed of them. Both are set to appear in court on Monday. The state of Minnesota intends to seek a stiffer penalty than usual in the criminal sexual conduct case against a former teacher at two Iron Range schools. 43-year-old Ryan Denzer Johnson of Embarrass faces three felonies after he allegedly sexually assaulted an adolescent female relative. Denzer Johnson was most recently a high school math teacher at Mesabi East in Aurora until his resignation shortly before the charges in August. He also taught at Northeast Range in Babbitt and was involved in both schools' robotics teams. The prosecutor filed a notice of intent to seek the upward departure of sentencing guidelines based on aggravating factors. One of the factors is the victim's particular vulnerability due to her age and relationship to Denzer Johnson. The second factor listed in court documents is that the alleged offense was committed in a location in which the victim had an expectation of privacy. Denzer Johnson remains jailed in St. Louis County, and his next court appearance is Monday. The Black Duck City Council passed an amended cannabis ordinance after a lengthy public hearing on Monday. Larissa Donovan was there and has more.
The zoning amendment removes the required buffers around schools and daycares for cannabis manufacturers and cultivators, leaving the buffers in place for dispensaries. Cannabis entrepreneur Alan Bonset with his company Nobo wants to buy the former Anderson Fabrics manufacturing plant in Black Duck's industrial area, but the plant is less than 100 yards away from Black Duck Head Start, an early childhood center. With the changes approved, Nobo is that much closer to its proposed cannabis cultivation and manufacturing facility that promises up to 150 new jobs. Residents raise concerns ranging from excess phosphorus in wastewater and potential crime increases to the business's proximity to Head Start. In response, Bonset cited the company's intense security protocols and technical procedures, the industry's heavy regulation, and his company's practice of investing in their people.
We're also a company that offers employee stock options to our employees. And in fact, we are in the 97th percentile of all cannabis companies nationally as far as what our benefits offer.
Mayor Max Gillette says he checked in with his counterpart in Benton Harbor, Michigan, where Nobo purchased an old foundry, and that he felt assured that the company would do right by Black Duck.
Nobo is a company that put its money where its mouth is. And Alan's the type of person that when he says he's going to do something, he does it.
Councilmember Lori Hamilton agreed with most of the council, saying with the state's legalization, they can't manipulate ordinances to keep out cannabis.
I don't feel like this company is coming in here to wreck this town. I feel like they're a business. They have a product.
Larissa Donovan, KAXE News.
Lakewood Health System will host an open house for its new cancer center 4 to 6 p.m. Friday in Staples. Hospital leaders say the addition was built to meet growing needs for rural oncology care. The new center offers things like a dedicated reception and waiting area, infusion bays, exam rooms and a procedure room, in-house scan systems, and radiation treatment technology. This is the second new cancer center in the region to open this year. Astera Health and CentraCare hosted a ribbon-cutting ceremony in Wadena in July. Without centers like these offering services, rural cancer patients often must travel long distances to get the care they need. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
The Up North Report here on the Wednesday Morning Show. Coming up, we're going to hear more from Maury Edition talking about air traffic control issues and record gold prices. I'm Andrew Dezingle here with Heidi Holtham.
We received support this morning from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984. Performing auto body and collision repair as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information, dalesautobodyinc.com.
And we received support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
The Grand Rapids Erie Community Foundation announces Itasca Area's 100-plus Women Who Care Giving Circle. That's this Monday, October 13th at Timberlake Lodge. Registration at 5, program at 5:30. Attendees each contribute $100, and nonprofits are nominated to receive the collective donation. Find more information and register on Facebook.
And the Virginia Public Library offers a genealogy assistance program the second Thursday of the month at 4 p.m. Whether you're just starting out or fine-tuning your research, all are welcome. And coming up in a bit, it's also going to be From the Vault, where we play something from the KBXE Vinyl Library.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm A. Martinez in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Michelle Martin in Washington, D.C. Good morning. The price of gold is now higher than ever, which is great for anyone who has it, but it's also a potential warning about what's going on with the economy overall. We'll have that story in a few minutes. But first, though,
it's been a tough week for the air traffic control system in the United States.
Sunset 103, stand by. We're going to be closing the tower soon, and SoCal's going to be taking control of the airport. So for now, stand by.
That's an air traffic controller at the Hollywood Burbank Airport on Monday, explaining to pilots that the local tower was about to close because of a staffing shortage.
Ground's closed, local's closed, the tower is closed due to staffing. So you just contact SoCal on the 800 number in the green book, you're clearing.
All right. Some of those pilots sound surprised, as you can hear in this archived audio recording from the website liveatc.net.
Is it because of the shutdown that you guys are going? It's for stopping.
That led to major delays at just that one airport on Monday, and the government shutdown is only making commercial aviation issues even worse. NPR transportation correspondent Joel Rose has been following what's happening in the skies and also on the ground. Joel, what kind of delays are you seeing?
Yeah, the Federal Aviation Administration says that staffing shortages caused delays at several airports again yesterday, including a full ground stop for a while at the airport in Nashville. Also, we saw delays at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago and Dallas Love Field. And we are looking at the possibility of more delay today. You know, I should note the FAA will limit the number of planes in the air in order to keep the system safe. But that said, it is probably not a great week for getting where you need to go on time.
And how is this? I mean, can this squarely be laid on the feet of the government shutdown, or are there deeper problems?
Yeah, there was already a nationwide shortage of air traffic controllers, which has nothing to do with this government shutdown. Staffing is several thousand controllers short of where the FAA and the controllers union say it should be. Nearly 11,000 certified controllers do have to work during the shutdown, but they do not get paid until it ends. And during the last one of these in 2019, we saw controllers calling in sick in higher than normal numbers, especially once that stoppage dragged on past a month. And that caused serious delays at airports on the East Coast and may have played a key role in bringing that shutdown to an end. There has been an uptick in the number of controllers calling in sick this week, according to federal officials. And it does not take huge numbers to have a big impact on a system that is already so short-staffed.
Yeah. What about rural airports? Tell us what's happening there.
Yeah. There is a federal program that subsidizes flights to rural airports. It's called the Essential Air Service Program. The Trump administration says that program will run out of money as soon as this weekend if the shutdown continues. And that could be a big deal for the almost 170 communities around the country that are part of this program, including more than 60 in Alaska alone. I talked to Daniel Friedenzone about this. He's a professor at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Florida.
It provides airline service to communities that probably would not have it. So it is important from the community's perspective. And I think that's partly why the Congress generally has been so supportive of it.
But all that said, it is not clear exactly how much of an immediate impact this funding lapse could have. At least one major carrier, Alaska Airlines, says it will continue flights for now, even without this subsidy. And it is likely that the smaller regional airlines that operate most of these flights would do the same, at least in the short run. You know, and one other thing I want to note, the White House proposed cutting more than $300 million in funding from this program earlier this year, even though the program does have broad bipartisan support in Congress.
That's NPR's Joel Rose. Joel, thanks.
Thank you.
Let's hear from the person who represents air traffic controllers as a group, the president of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. He was nice enough to come by our studios. Nick Daniels, good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
So the transportation secretary blamed delays at airports on, quote, a slight tick up in sick calls, unquote, by air traffic control workers. Does that sound right to you?
The number of air traffic controllers, as it was already reported, is extremely low to begin with. As far as flight delays being blamed on it, flight delays happen every single day for a ton of reasons that we are the ones left to contend with. There's only 10,800 of us when there should be 14,633. Only one or two sick calls on any given day puts us in a position to where we have to either restrict traffic, combine sectors and positions, and ultimately we have procedures to deal with this.
So how many are calling in sick? Is it one or two a day?
Yeah, it depends on the level of facility. We have some facilities that have 300 people inside of them. We have some facilities that have 10. Because we operate 313 different facilities.
Is it organized?
No, it's not organized in any way, shape, or form. I represent a proud group of professionals that show up to do their job each and every day. Anybody that went out and did something nefarious would be acting on their own, but not because of this
well,
union.
To the point, though, air traffic controllers are deemed essential, which means they are expected to work without pay, even during a shutdown. Briefly, just describe the conditions they're working under.
What they're working under is one of the lowest morale times in history. They're going to work. They know they're short-staffed already. The pressure that's on top of them, they work with unreliable equipment. And all of those things add up to the stress and complexity of one of the most high-consequence jobs in the entire world.
So, like, earlier this week, right, the Hollywood Burbank Airport near Los Angeles operated with no air traffic controllers. Their counterparts in San Diego were managing air traffic. There were delays of, like, 2.5 hours, according to the FAA. You've done this job. Like, so how do air traffic controllers keep people safe under those conditions?
They've done it for 25 years, and that our safety is number one. And we've seen this. That was not the first time Burbank has ever closed down. That was not the first time that an airport has had to close due to staffing. There's been 1,000 occurrences this year alone that we've had an air traffic control, what we call zero, at a facility for either equipment or for staffing. So when we have somebody else take over that airspace, controllers just can't operate at the same level of efficiency.
1,000 incidences of air traffic control towers having to close down so far this year alone?
Some parts of a facility. We have power and tracons or different areas inside of an en route facility. And yes, over 1,000 occurrences where we've dealt with this very thing. It's just now front page news. Uh-huh. And we're glad it's front page news so people can see the state of the system and why we're advocating so hard to fix it.
Well, speaking to that, Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy talks about modernizing air traffic control. We've heard about archaic technology in the control tower. We're talking about floppy disks, if people even remember what that is, you know, paper. What happens to efforts to modernize when the government shuts down?
The sad part is, and the reality is, we had to stop many of the different projects or even sustaining the system as it is leading up to the shutdown because you have to start canceling all the travel, all the plans, all the meetings, and the air traffic controllers are focused on the job of ensuring that we get through this shutdown and in no way able to work on the projects that are coming up ahead. So every day that this lasts is just another day it's going to add on to the problem existing later. Secretary Duffy has found ways to ensure that the training continues and some of these projects go on, but they're not at full force and full speed.
As we just heard from our reporter Joel Rose, during the 2019 shutdown, air traffic controllers called out sick, which caused disruptions at airports on the East Coast. I mean, obviously, I can, just from our conversation, I'm sure there's some dispute about just how much of a factor that was in the delay, but that pressure is believed to have helped end the shutdown. Do you think the same thing could happen here again?
The message that I've wanted to make extremely clear is air traffic controllers don't start a shutdown. Air traffic controllers don't end a shutdown. Politicians are the only ones that start a shutdown and have the ability to end it. Air traffic controllers are going to show up and do everything we can, but the longer that this lasts, it's going to place a continued strain on air traffic controllers, the stress, the pressure. Air traffic controllers have to show up to save people's lives. And if they're not fit for that duty because they're worried about, you know, everything that's going on at home, putting food on the table, gas in the car, making sure their kids are looked after, that's something that we have to face. And it's something that's going to be real every single day that this continues. And they start seeing $0 paychecks on October 28th.
That is Nick Daniels. He's president of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. And I also want to mention a Marine veteran. Thank you so much for your service and thanks for coming in this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. And thank you to every American who is out there supporting the air traffic controllers during this difficult time.
Thanks so much.
Gold was already having a good year, and it just broke another record. This week, the price of gold went above $4,000 an ounce for the first time ever. NPR finance correspondent Maria Aspen explains why that is not a good sign for the economy.
Gold is one of the oldest investments around, especially in times of turmoil. It's shiny and solid and widely seen as a safe haven when investors are worried about what else is going on in the world, and especially in the United States.
Gold usually rises if the dollar is weak.
That's Jose Rasco, Chief Investment Officer for HSBC in the Americas. As he points out, the dollar is weak. It's down about 10% this year. That's in part because of all the uncertainty created by President Trump, from his tariffs to how he's picking fights with the Federal Reserve. Investors around the world are worried about the long-term damage these policies could have on the broader economy. These worries aren't obvious. Stock markets have been hitting record high after record high. But dig a little deeper, and it's clear that investors are trying to hedge their bets and diversify away from the United States.
Given all the uncertainty around policy, people said, we're not sure about the dollar. And the dollar has depreciated as a result.
Now, the price of gold is already up about 50% this year, its best run in nearly half a century. And Goldman Sachs this week predicted that it will go up even more by the end of next year. Don Stroyven is Goldman's co-head of commodities research. He points out there's another factor here. The Fed is cutting interest rates.
When interest rates go down, demand for gold from investors tends to rise.
That's partly because lower rates can lead to higher inflation, and gold is a hedge against inflation. It can also just feel like a security blanket for nervous investors. After all, the last time gold was this hot was back in 1979, in the middle of a global energy and inflation crisis that made the world seem very uncertain. Maria Aspen, NPR News, New York.
And that's as good as gold. I'd love to rush into the...
This is NPR News.
That didn't work as well as I thought.
What's happening right now?
That's supposed to be Gold by Spandau Ballet. It was going to be a whole bit about gold because I think that song is so funny.
Okay.
Go, always believe in your soul.
And what did we hear instead?
It was Gold, but I guess the album version is very long.
Okay, there we go. Why don't I know that Spandau Ballet song? Huh.
It's the second most famous one I know.
Yeah, this much is true.
It's on the same album, even. So true.
Yeah.
Funny how it seems.
I can just see the video, MTV video of that one with the very black and white, very kind of German existentialist kind of 80s look. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, they were part of that whole, what was it? Kind of like new wave soul movement that was happening with like Rick Astley.
Yeah, I know. So all seems funny there, but yes, I remember when that was a big deal when Rick Astley came out and all those songs. And I just saw someone do a cover of, it's from the same era. I'll think of it. Some 80s song.
But I have Spandau Ballet's first album, which is very post-punky album. It's a very different sound than what they became famous for.
I really liked around the same time, like the Human League. Do you ever listen to
I love
them?
The Human League.
Yeah. And the one I'm thinking of is Take On Me, the A-ha band. Yep. I just heard a cover of that recently. I'm like, oh, it sounds... It's so... poppy that I forgot someone could do a cover of it and make it sound different. I was like, oh, okay, yeah.
A poppier version of Take On Me?
I know that doesn't make any sense. How is that possible? A different version, a different speed of it or something. But, well, there we go. It's Wednesday morning and my coffee isn't quite kicking in. You've made it plenty strong. I'm not saying that, but I'm having one of those kind of where your eyes are a little bit at half mast day, even though I slept fairly well. Not been sleeping that great. As of late, and you know, having conversations about like what you do to, you know, if your brain is racing, like can you go through try to get the capitals of the U.S. to try to get your brain off of whatever you're thinking about. My husband does this thing and he thinks it's magic, and I'm like, that would never work for me. He only lets himself think of what is in the room, what is in the bedroom. I'm like, how could you control that? That's ridiculous. So I don't know. Sometimes it's a hard thing for me when I finally am so tired and then your brain's kind of racing. Do you have any little tricks?
Listening to calming music usually helps me. Or listening to a podcast I've already listened to before.
Oh.
Because then it's just people talking and it's just like, oh, I've already heard this. So this is boring to me.
Okay, but go back. Calming music? What are you talking about?
No, calming music.
Calming. Okay, it was like... Gotcha. Yeah, I tend to do what you're not supposed to do. I know what the good sleep hygiene is, but I will watch something because I fall asleep or do something like that. And you're not supposed to. It's not good for your brain. But sometimes I just like to get my thinking somewhere else. I did try a friend of mine suggested the capitals of all the states. It's kind of amazing how I didn't remember lots of them.
Yeah, I feel like I would get more frustrated because I don't know them very well.
But it is kind of like if you sit there and you're laying there and you're going through like, okay, Washington. And you think about, is it Seattle? You know, like, because I feel like when I learned them and memorized them, I was a little kid and I didn't know other cities besides those capitals.
Is it Olympia?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. you know what I mean? It was like, I only knew one memorized capital in a state. I didn't really know where the state was because you're little, but now it's I have to go through it and be like, what is the... Anyway, some of them are tough to come up with.
Yeah, I would do terrible at it. I can name every state.
When I tried this a few times, I was even struggling with California. I was like, oh, finally it came to me.
Sacramento.
Yes. It shouldn't be hard, but it was. There you go. What do you do? Do you have a little trick to get yourself to sleep, a little breathing exercise, or do you count or, you know, never counted sheep, but some people do.
I tried the counting sheep thing and it doesn't work for me.
You can text us 218-326-1234.
And also later this morning, we're going to have a conversation at Area Voices. It's going to be a little earlier today, around 7:40. We're going to be talking with the Heartland Symphony Orchestra about their upcoming performances going on this weekend. And then later in the show, we're going to be talking with Jack Nackbar about the classic movie series going on tomorrow night at Edge Center for the Arts, where they're also having a new exhibit that'll be premiering tomorrow night as well before the classic movie series. So a lot going on. It's a new exhibit of paintings and murals called Anima Mundi, Meet the Artists, and you can stay for the classic movie series afterwards.
What about, let's do movie check. What have you seen recently? Last few weeks?
I'm in scary movie mode.
Okay.
So I watched at least, have I seen three or four this past week? Well, one of them isn't scary. It's Popeye, the live action movie from the 80s.
Oh, sure. Robin Williams.
Yeah, with Robin Williams and Shelley Duvall. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. I think I went to that in the theater. I must have.
And then I watched The Crow.
Oh.
From the 90s. Do you remember that movie?
I didn't see it, but I think I remember.
It was okay. It was very visually interesting to watch.
Okay.
And then watched this horror movie called From Beyond, which is based on an H.P. Lovecraft short story. And it was not very good, but it was made by the same director who made The Reanimator, if you know that movie. It's a very... what's the word I'm looking for? It's got a lot of practical effects, but they're all gross, you know?
Okay.
And then I watched this great horror movie called A Dark Song, which is about this mother whose son passed away and is trying to... She recruits a guy from the occult to help perform a ceremony so she can talk to her son and also request a favor from her guardian angel.
Wow.
But it's a very tricky, I don't know... What's the word I'm looking for? Ritual to do it. So it's scary. Because so many things could go wrong when you mess with the occult.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm not a big...
scary movie fan?
No, not at all.
What about like Jaws?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed Jaws. I think I saw it a couple of times.
What about like the old Universal horror, like the... 1930s Dracula or Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah. I've watched those things, but I don't think I'd be drawn to them now, but I've seen some. But the last, like, sort of, and definitely in contemporary movies, I don't care for it. Last one I saw, and it did kind of freak me out, was the, I should look this up before, one word, Them? No. What's it called?
Them, the giant ant movie?
Yeah, that's the one. No, I think I have seen that giant ant movie, which is funny.
Yeah, it's got a great part where you like the guys disappear, and then like you see the giant ant with a rib cage and its little mandible things.
Huh. Anyway, I'll come up with it. But we'd love to hear from you. We did hear, hoping for some advice here. We did hear from our friend Betty from Nevis. She says, to get to sleep, count backwards from 100. When you get sidetracked, start over. Works for me.
Hmm.
Tried it, but I'll try again. And Laura says, to fall asleep, I will start on the West Coast and think of loved ones that live in those states and work my way across the USA, saying prayers for them as I go. Wow, Laura. That, at least if you can't sleep, sounds really pleasant, that you're not overthinking, you know. You're not overthinking that you can't fall asleep. I'm getting a little bit better at that. But anyway, what I was trying to remember was Get Out. I saw Get Out.
Oh.
And that's just not the kind of movie. I enjoyed it, I think, but it did kind of freak me out a little bit. That's just not my kind of movie. That's all.
I really enjoyed it. I remember seeing it in theaters, in a very full theater at the time, which is always nice to see. And also, for new movies, saw One Battle After Another. Really enjoyed that movie. The new Leonardo DiCaprio with Paul Thomas Anderson directing movie.
Oh. Have they ever worked together before?
They haven't, no.
Yeah, okay.
And then I also saw The Conjuring Last Rites, which was not so good.
Oh, all right.
Time now for From the Vault. We play something from the KBXE Vinyl Library as a way to encourage our KBXE Vinyl, or not vinyl volunteers, are just regular volunteers, to play something from the vinyl library. And today we're going to be hearing from Marianne Faithfull. This album is called Go Away From My World, and this is the title track from it.
Let me dream alone. I got for all of my love was a broken heart.
Marianne Faithfull with Go Away From My World, which was also the name of the album from the KBXE Vault. Very exciting stuff. I'm Andrea Zingle here with Heidi Holton.
We've got Best Wishes coming up next. We're continuing to hear from people, and we can't thank you enough to help us through the gutting of federal funding. When we began in 1976, almost 50 years ago, we didn't have federal funding in that first year. And now we find ourselves right in that same spot again. And this is a reminder to us that it is people that keep it going, kept it going from the beginning, and can keep it going now. You're helping, you're making it possible for us, and you can easily, if you didn't get a chance to donate, you can text the word donate right now to 218-326-1234. Thank you so much. Over the weekend, Tom Daniel hosting Back Porch Harmony, pledges coming in because they love Tom's show, and people understanding that you don't just get this anywhere else, where real people are putting together things they care about and they're choosing everything. And it seems funny to say that's unusual, but it is.
Mm-hmm. That's just becoming a rare quality in the radio these days. And we got to keep it going. And the only way to do that is by supporting it. And you can do that by visiting our website, kaxe.org, and clicking that wonderful little donate button. We receive support from the First State Bank of Big Fork, with branches in Big Fork and Kellyer, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device. Hometown banking at its best since 1912. FSBBigFork.com, member FDIC.
Thanks also goes out to the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering workshops in October. Mixed Media Animal Portrait, October 17th through the 19th. History and Harvesting of Clay on October 22nd, both held at 9 Central Street West in Bagley. More information, registration, bagleyarts.org or on Facebook. Andrew, I'm going to be starting a pottery class.
Oh.
I haven't done anything. I love pottery. I haven't been anywhere near making pottery since I was probably 12 or 13 years old. So I'm a little nervous. I'm not super artsy, but I figured it might be fun.
Yeah, I think it'll be cool.
Okay.
Do you get to use like the spinning wheel thing and everything? Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Gotta find some smocks so I don't mess up all my clothes.
Right? It's time now for Best Wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary for today, October 8th.
From Bo V, happy birthday to Jay Saspo.
I would say
unless it's Caspo and we have a misspelling, but JC, you know, happy birthday to you, buddy. I don't know. Rachel Malberg, happy birthday to you from Grand Rapids.
And Oscar Forsman in Ishpeming, Michigan. Yeah. Happy 74th birthday today.
You got to let me do the next one.
All right.
Because it's one of my BFFs. Cora Braun, happy 12th birthday to you from Shevlin. Hope you're having a great morning, some really good breakfast, and you should text us about it. 218-326-1234.
And happy birthday to Kate Short from McGregor. And to the twins, Sam and Holden McFarlane in Des Moines, Iowa, celebrating their 24th birthday today. Happy birthday. And we're going to play a tune for all the birthdays today. And this one's special to me because I just saw this band live, Destroyer. And the song I'm going to play is actually the song I played at midnight when I turned 37 last week.
Wow, nice.
It seems like an appropriate song as you get older.
Happy belated, by the way.
Oh, thank you. This is Destroyer with the song Times Square.
Jacob's in a state of decimation. The writing on the wall isn't writing at all. Just forces of nature in love with our weather station. Hand in hand through the great away at dawn. The writing on the wall said Jesus saves. The writing on the wall mentions honey playing a game with the waves. You can follow a rose wherever it grows, so you could fall in love with Times Square.
And that was Destroyer with Times Square from the album Poison Season. Great song.
It was great
to see live.
Would you do it on another birthday, or was it just the 37th?
I would do it for probably the rest of my life, maybe.
Wow.
I'll make the commitment right now.
Nice.
Saying it on the record right here every time.
And how did you, was it a, do you have a vinyl of it? Did you have headphones on? What was the situation like?
I just listened to it through my phone. I do have the vinyl of it. I have every Destroyer album on vinyl.
Well, it's, why did I think otherwise? Of course you do.
All 13 albums.
Wow.
And some of them are out of print. I don't want to brag, but I've got them.
What's the background? What's Destroyer?
He is a Canadian artist. He also performs with the, who does he perform with? The New Pornographers sometimes.
Oh, okay.
But he's had these solo albums since like late 90s, I want to say. And I didn't find out about him until like 2010 when he released Kaput.
Okay.
And that was my introduction to him. And then I wasn't like a huge fan, but I did enjoy that album. And then Poison Season came out, was a big fan of that. And then when Ken came out, I was like, okay, I'm all in on Destroyer. And have been ever since.
Wow.
Seen him 3 times now.
All right. Usually it's like a First Avenue band? Or
He played at the Fine Line.
Okay.
I've seen him at the Amsterdam Fine Line. And then in Fargo, he did a solo acoustic show at the Aquarium.
Nice. And for those playing along at home, the band shirt Andrew is sporting today is Spoon.
Yep.
He wears a band shirt every day. It's a very cool thing.
Yesterday I didn't.
What?
No, I just wore a plain old long sleeve shirt with nothing on it.
I guess I didn't notice. We were on a Zoom call yesterday, but I didn't check out what you were wearing. But
I know.
We can mostly rely on Andrew to do that. Because what you might want to do the next time is just layer it so that you can still wear your band t-shirt, wear a long sleeve
and
under
then do
your
double
shirt.
The laundry, Heidi? Yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah, you can do it. You're 37. You can do it. Because we rely on you to have the cool band shirts where you kind of look in and go, is that a band? You know, oh, okay.
It's always my favorite conversation, especially when people ask me, who are you going to go? When I say I'm going to a concert.
Yeah.
Who are you going to see? Well, you're not going to like the answer.
Yeah.
It's so-and-so. And like, never heard of them. Yep. That's what I thought.
It's kind of become your uniform. It's good.
Yeah.
The band shirt thing. So do you always, what's the thinking behind purchasing the shirts? Are these from concerts? Do you have to get one from every concert? Do they have to be a certain sort of thing?
I don't get them from every concert, but I like to just to like throw a little extra money at the bands.
Aww.
Because that it's hard to be a touring musician these days.
Right.
So I like to throw a little extra, and then I'll buy like band shirts from like their websites too if it's a band I don't get a chance to see live. Like I bought recently a Death Cab for Cutie shirt that's like kind of a parody of iPod's menus.
Oh, okay.
Because they are such a synonymous band with iPod era, I think.
All right. Nice. Okay. I just wanted to kind of know the thinking there. I'm trying to remember when I have bought merch at concerts. I don't wear a lot of them, but anyway, you don't need to hear that. That's going back in my archives. We are going to be learning more about some classical music going on in the Brainerd and Little Falls area. Andrew's bringing us an Area Voices story coming up. And then we're talking movies with Jack Nackbar. If you want to tell us your favorite scary movie, we're talking about what they're showing this Thursday night, Night of the Living Dead. But tell us yours. Text 218-326-1234.
Support for this program comes from Sanford Health with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org. And we receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company powering the region's homes, businesses, and industries since 1923. Learn more about its vision of a carbon-free future at mnpower.com/energyforward.
Fall Flannel Fest at historic Kalava Hall in Virginia this Saturday. Sloppy Joes are going to be served starting at 5 o'clock with music from Lindala Brothers from 6 to 8. Proceeds benefit the preservation of the hall. How do we feel about Sloppy Joes?
Big fan.
All right. So
put
like
a slice of cheese on that and you've got yourself a meal.
No, I don't think cheese should go on that.
They should go on them. I didn't think so either until I worked at a restaurant that did it. And I was like, this is delicious. And now I do it all the time.
How often do you have Sloppy Joes?
Well, not ever. I know, not very often, but.
Okay. You ever make them at home, like a nice crock pot full of sloppy joe?
I should.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, that's a good
and
idea.
And then you could freeze some of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then have it later, you know,
mm-hmm.
and put your old cheese, like what would like a thing of American
put
cheese?
Put some cheese and pickles on there.
Pickles I'll do.
Cheddar cheese I usually use.
All right. So I don't think cheese should go on a sloppy joe for some reason.
I always thought that was the norm. I thought I was the one who was weird that didn't put.
What are you going to put on mayo on there next?
Why not? Sounds good to me.
Here's another food related event coming up in Lake George at the Trinity Lutheran Church on Highway 71. They have a lutefisk supper this Saturday, 4 to 7:30. There'll be lefse, Swedish meatballs, pie, and more.
Mm, I do love Swedish meatballs.
Would you put cheese on those?
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, okay. And no cheese, of course, on lutefisk. I think that would just ruin it, wouldn't it?
Maybe.
We'll talk. Maybe we'll see if that's not far from where Amy Thielen's from. She's going to be joining us coming up in an hour. And we're talking fall foods and what's happening in her garden. Maybe she will give us a little insight on the Sloppy Joe situation, too.
Now it's time for Area Voices. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm the producer of Area Voices. Heartland Symphony Orchestra Fall Concert Series begins October 11th and 12th with their production of Opening Nights. I'm now joined by three people involved with the orchestra offering their unique perspective on the upcoming concert.
My name is Ryan Weber. I'm the music director and conductor of the Heartland Symphony. And I guess my connection to this program is I'm the brainchild behind it. I put the pieces together and thought of what would work well and invited our guest artists to work with us. And yeah, I'm excited to present this concert.
My name is Kyle Brown. I play piccolo with the Heartland Symphony Orchestra, but I also am a composer. So I've composed an original work that Heartland will be premiering on the October concert.
I'm Steve Zander. I'm a violinist. I'm based in Malibu, California. And my connection to this program is, so I'm the violin soloist for The Lark Ascending by Vaughan Williams. And I have performed in Brainerd every summer for many years as a musician in the Lakes Area Music Festival.
When are the opening night performances and what will be performed?
So our concerts opening nights are on Saturday, October 11th. And that's at the Charles D. Martin Auditorium in Little Falls at 7:30 p.m. And Sunday, October 2nd, the Gitche Zibi Auditorium attached to Brainerd High School. And that concert's at 2:30. And so the theme for this program, opening nights, is my philosophy is a little something for everybody. And I think this concert encapsulates that. So we're going to do some standards by Edward Elgar, one of his Pomp and Circumstance marches. We're going to do a piece by Ruth Gibbs called Song for Orchestra. But we're also featuring new music as well. We're doing a world premiere, which Kyle Brown will talk about, a piece called Radiant. And then we're thrilled to feature Steve Zander on one of my favorite violin solos, The Lark Ascending by Ray Vaughan Williams. And then finally, this concert's also special because we do youth outreach. So at each concert, we'll have students from the local area orchestras performing with us on an arrangement of Ode to Joy by Beethoven.
Excellent. So in the email you sent me, you said that this Radiant piece was commissioned. Was that commissioned by the Heartland Symphony Orchestra or...
Yeah.
Who commissioned it?
We did.
Okay.
So I've known Kyle as a composer since he joined Heartland and moved to the area, and I've explored his works, and I feel it's really important to keep, not just play the music, the people who have passed, by people who are living and present as well, and champion new music. And so Kyle and I, we've had conversations on and off probably for over a year, or about a year, and so excited for the audience to hear his piece. Rehearsals have been going great, and it's a really special work. There's nothing more special for an orchestra or any ensemble than premiering new music in the moment.
So, Kyle, let's talk to you about this piece, Radiant. What was the process like of being asked to create a piece for the Heartland Symphony Orchestra?
The first conversations we had were casual conversations between me and Ryan about him asking me to commission me to write a piece for the group. So we had been talking about it as a loose idea for a while. And finally, when we got around to programming for this year, Ryan said, let's make it happen. So it was very exciting to write for any group, but it's even more exciting to write a group that I'm familiar with the players. Oftentimes when I get asked to write a piece for a group, or if I write a piece and send it off to another group for them to learn, I don't know who exactly is playing the parts and their exact ability level or what styles they like. So as a composer, it's very exciting for me to put a face to each name and a name to each instrument and say, okay, Amy's playing this oboe part and Leslie's playing this violin part. And I can really dial in each part to the player. So it's been a really exciting process to write a piece for the group and then to also work on that piece with the same group. So it's been very fun.
So that leads me to a question for both of you here. Of what was it like for you, Ryan, to be working with the composer right in the orchestra that you're in? And for you, Kyle, what's that like as I wrote this piece, but Ryan's the one that's kind of running the show here. What's that dynamic like for the both of you?
It's really fun. It can be a little intimidating at times, but it's overall, it's just a blast. It's such a collaborative process. Kyle is easy to work with, and you know, with any score, you know, you have the notes on the page. That those are your rules. You're supposed to, you're trying to follow and bring out as best as you can. But what I'm so thankful for with Kyle is his trust in me and the orchestra to do what's best for the group. And so we can make slight changes on the fly and always with being respectful to what Kyle wants. But taking those chances together, and it's been great. You know, I've worked with other composers with Heartland, all fabulous experiences, but they normally don't come until closer to the end. So being able to see Kyle weekly, ask him questions at rehearsal, in the moment, it's really adds that extra shine to our performance.
I'll echo what Ryan said. I'll say that as a composer, I take a very more collaborative approach. Everybody is a little different. As a performer, I've worked with composers who know exactly what they want and they wrote exactly what they want. And if you don't do that, the composer will make sure that they work together with you to get the effect they want. I take a more liberal approach to music interpretation. I actually find it really exciting when a performer interprets the music in a way that is truthful to what's written, but allows them to put their own spin on it. I think that allows a greater musical performance, or a more musical performance, rather, if the performer also has some say in how the music is going to be performed. So I'm pretty generous with my leeway that I give any performer or conductor when they work on my music, because I know that we're all there for the same goal of making a good quality product that people are going to enjoy. Ryan's fun to work with because Ryan will do that. And Ryan is a musical conductor, and any decision that Ryan makes is always based in some musical thing. So, you know, even if he says, hey, can we change this part here? It's always in service of the music and not just some arbitrary thing that he's deciding to do. As a performer, playing my own piece is always tough. I've done it a couple times. My composer brain and my performing brain are two different brains. And I sit down in my chair and I start reading what I wrote and I go, wow, who did this? Why did I do this to myself sometimes? So often in rehearsal, I'm just like totally locked into what I'm playing and sort of not even paying attention to the composer things that I should be paying attention to. Rehearsing my own pieces as a performer is always more challenging on my end because there's sort of a disconnect between writing it and playing it. And so when I get to play my own music, it allows me a greater connection to my own compositional process.
Steve, this question is for you. So you're from California, but you've been coming to the Brainerd Lakes area to perform for over a decade now. How did you get this connection in the Brainerd Lakes area?
Well, for me, it was a family connection. So my sister has been the orchestra teacher in Brainerd at the Brainerd Public Schools for over two decades. So I think it was in 2011 when Lakes Area Music Festival was still, you know, I think that was maybe its third season and they were still looking for more players to come. And I got suggested probably by her to go play there. Yeah, and in the meantime, my parents have moved to Brainerd in their retirement. So I have my whole family living in Brainerd now.
How did the connection get made with the Heartland Symphony Orchestra?
Well, Ryan, I can't remember if it was your idea to
reach
out to Leslie. Or...
So Lakes Area Music Festival is a month-long summer festival, brings in top players from all over the country. It's a real gem in the woods, literally, for our region. And I have a lot of respect for what they do. I love their products. And I thought it could be a good relationship for Heartland and Lakes Area on the Heartland side to invite a musician to come work with the orchestra to hopefully bring in some new audience members. And it also on the Lakes Area side, hopefully be some great press and more outreach for them during the year. And so when talking with Scott Likens, the Lakes Area Music Director, you know, we're thinking about good possibilities or good options, it just started clicking that we have that family connection because Steve's sister, Leslie Zander, is the concertmaster of the Heartland Symphony. And so I approached Leslie first and said, do you think Steve might be interested in playing with us? And it was kind of a musical phone tag. And then she talked to Steve and she texted me and she's like, yeah, he's in, so you can talk to him. And that's where the invitation started and we went from there.
Did you have this piece in mind going before asking Steve to participate, or did you have an input in this?
It was all Steve. I'll let him speak more to how he chose this piece.
Okay.
Well, yeah, so I've always really loved this piece. I've never played the solo part before, but I had played it, you know, as an orchestra member with various orchestras that I work with here in California. Even the first time I heard it made a really strong impression on me. And so this seemed like kind of a perfect opportunity for me to have an excuse to finally learn it. So I'm really, really thankful for that.
So what's that like for you as a soloist to like kind of having to practice by yourself for now? While, like, do you play an orchestra performance to like accompany you, or is it kind of you're just playing by yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a lot of solitary time. You know, I do have the score in front of me often when I'm practicing just to try to hear the orchestra part, get to know it better, sort of to prepare for what I'm going to be hearing as I play with them. You know, of course, listening to recordings. I am going to get together with a pianist next week and play it through with piano accompaniment, just so that, you know, it'll be, you know, closer to what it'll actually be like when I play with orchestra. I can hear more of the piece instead of just my own part.
So Kyle, this is a question for you. What's it like to have a piece that you've composed to kick off the Heartland Symphony Orchestra season? Like you're starting the season with your piece here.
It's an honor. I did sort of write it in mind with the feeling it would be a good concert opener. So I'm glad it ended up as such. It's always challenging writing pieces, but also pieces that will have like legs beyond the event that you write them for. So I wrote this piece specifically for Heartland with Heartland in mind and, you know, writing for particular groups of instruments and combinations of instruments. So my goal, though, is to have it premiered by this group and then send it off to other places and hopefully for it to take on a